This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Does America make sense of what happened last week? One Washington Post columnist said these 4 days of videotape violence shocked the conscience and crushed the soul. Here in New Hampshire, vigils and prayer services were held over the weekend, honoring both the two black men who were victims of police shootings last week and the 5 Dallas police officers killed on Thursday. And the voices of Granite State law enforcement and minority community activists were prominent as they tried to explain their feelings and their frustrations in this turbulent time. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire reaction to the terrible week we've seen. Let's hear from you this hour. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. With me in studio is David Mara. He's Portsmouth Police Chief and formerly the Chief of Police in Manchester. David Mara spent 29 years on the force there in the Queen City. And Chief Mara, welcome back. It's good to see you.
Same here. Thank you.
Also with us, Willard Lett, President of the Manchester NAACP, a community of volunteers that works to end discrimination and unfair treatment based on race. And Willard Lett, a big welcome back to you, too. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also with us, Lieutenant Patrick Cheatham. He's a police officer from Londonderry. He's also the first vice president of the New Hampshire Police Association. And Lieutenant Cheatham, it's good to meet you. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me.
And we were also hoping to be hearing from later Rena Goldthree, an assistant professor of African and African-American studies at Dartmouth College. We hope to hear from her soon. And I think I want to turn to you first, Willard Lett. What's just churning around in your mind right now, that one big thought that just won't go away?
I think the big thought that I have is the persistence and the the dominant narrative in American society that's part of an antiquated 18th century notion of the human family that sorts people in a way that that resulted in the creation of this idea called race that served as the basis of dehumanizing part of the population to the point where they could be held as property. And I think the vestiges of that idea are still present in the ongoing insistence, both by government and in popular culture, holding on to this idea. And so we have these kind of issues and challenges where some people are actually treated differently, and other people, either perceive that if they are, then there's a reason for it, and the reason goes back, to this old erroneous idea, and actually. An idea that's been discredited, scientifically, but still socially, sociologically, very much present.
So this long, long history of slavery, racism, that's what's churning around in your head that you just can't get rid of. This is part of a huge American narrative.
Yeah, well, you see it played out, particularly the part of that narrative that the organizing idea called race, where you have this thing that called white people and black people. You see it played out even when the dialogue around this whole concept where some people are saying, hey, Black Lives Matter. These people are being treated unfairly. The lives of young black men are not being honored. And the reaction to that, so it's all around. I think this whole narrative and this idea about race that once served as justification for treating some people as property is still a central part of the American zeitgeist.
And yet, it's so sad. Before all these events that we saw last week, it seemed almost, Willard, and correct me if I'm wrong, like we're at a moment where society is more diverse, where you're seeing more interracial marriages, where you're seeing,
you know, at least in the popular media, people of all races being friends, interracial adoptions. I was at Hampton Beach over the weekend. I saw interracial families everywhere. I saw groups of young people of all hues, so to speak. So in a way, Americans in their day-to-day lives are mixing it up more than ever, especially the millennial generation.
Well, definitely, I think you're really pointing to individual behavior, but there's institutional and structural forces at work that kind of sorts opportunities and kind of defines how people are perceived in a way that ends up replicating these same kinds of problems. Even with the, there's no denying the numerical reality that the country is becoming more and more diverse in terms of its appearance and people from other and non-Europeans being part of the larger society. However, when we look at power and privilege, you know, when folk talk about, oh, well, there's this inequality in society and there's 1%, when you look at the characteristics of the 1%, you know, when you look at all these various factors, when we start talking about disparities, it proves itself to be true, you know, that this is persistent, ongoing, and even many of the problems that we're talking about now, you know, particularly with the police, are more and more front and center because they're being recorded, because of the cell phone recordings. It's not that they're new, you know, they're longstanding problems, but now they're reaching the public consciousness in a way that's very direct.
We should definitely talk about the role of video and being shared so widely and its role in this. And Chief Mayor, I know you worked with Woolard Lett in your long term on the Manchester Police Force. Again, you're in Portsmouth now. What are you thinking about right now, Chief Mayor? I'm sure there's a lot going on in your mind, but I just wonder sort of how you're feeling about all this and how you're processing it.
Well, the first thing I want to say is everybody in law enforcement in New Hampshire, our hearts go out to the officers and their families who were ambushed and killed. We are very saddened by that. What I'm thinking about, and I've had time to digest it, I always look at our state, New Hampshire. We're a small state. We're a state where if we get enough people working together, we can prevent problems from coming here or solve problems that are already manifested here. So what I'm looking at, how can we prevent this from happening in New Hampshire? How can we prevent the discord between the aspects of the community? And I say to myself, the best way to do it is to have interaction other than while you're working, other than going to a call. The best way to do it is have our police force all throughout the state have constant contact with the community. Community policing is so important. You have to know the community that you police. You have to be a part of that community, and that community has to feel like it is their police department that they see in that police car going by. Now, I've had many conversations with Willard in the past, and he's informed me that there are neighborhoods throughout this country where they look at the police departments, the police department as being an occupying force. I don't feel like that's the way people feel in New Hampshire, but we have to prevent that from happening. And the best way to do that is get the community involved in policing. Make it a group effort. You have to make sure that everybody in your community has a voice. Everybody in your community has a say on how your police department is run. Do they have an issue? You have to address those issues right away so they don't fester. And the next thing that we have to do, and I think we do a very good job of it in New Hampshire, is the way we select police officers, the way we train them. And training does not just include how do you use your gun, how do you use your radio, how do you drive a police cruiser, knowing the laws. The training also includes cultural differences. Train that a lot of people don't look at the police the same way, that you have to be able to break through that barrier to effectively be a police officer. And another thing we have to do as well is, again, the outreach. And if you look at what a police officer has to do, what they're subjected to, for instance, and there are roughly 900,000 police officers in the United States, In 2015, 123 police officers were killed. So far this year, 59, 26 by gunfire. In 2014, there were 15,725 assaults against law enforcement officers, with 13,824 injuries resulting. So if you look at it from a police officer's perspective, when they are in when they stop a car or when they're responding to a call, they always have to face that reality, and they have to really depend on their training. And we expect police officers to make split-second decisions. And sometimes perhaps they don't make the right decision. When you're under stressful conditions and you have to decide whether to use force against somebody, you don't have time to think about it. You have to make that decision. And that's where selection, making sure we select the right police officers to try to make a determination, is that individual capable of making the right decisions under stressful situations? And then again, the constant training. So being a police officer is not an easy job. And what I really worry about is, are we going to have police officers out there, and when they're making that risk assessment in that split second, are they now going to be saying, how am I going to be looked at? Am I going to be in the newspaper?
The videotape?
Right. You don't want them making the decision. You just want them to follow their training, always do what's right, and hopefully the outcome, based on your training and the type of person you are, comes out differently. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't police officers out there that shouldn't be police officers. I said there's 900 police officers out there in the United States. Some of them shouldn't be police officers, like in any other industry. Some people just aren't suited for that job. But if you look at the thousands upon thousands of encounters that everyday police officers have with the public, I think overall, we're doing a pretty good job in the United States.
I want to bring you into this too, Lieutenant Cheatham, and then I have a lot more questions for all of you. But just real broadly to start off, what's going through your mind after this just terrible week that we've seen?
Well, in my near 14 years in law enforcement, I don't know that I've ever seen anything like what's happening in our nation right now on both sides. And I think Mr. Lett makes some really valid points, as does Chief Mara. And I think it just comes down to having a fundamental respect for human life as police officers, as members of the community on both sides. And if, like Mr. Lett was saying, that, you know, if we have that respect for each other, then perhaps some of these other issues don't come to the forefront in that sense. And if we treat each other with respect, then I think we can combat a lot of these things peacefully, civilly, and respectfully.
What's it like to be a police officer these days, Lieutenant Cheatham, when the public, many members of the public, are armed, are carrying openly at some of the protests that we've seen? You know, protesters have been open carrying, and they've got that right. They've got the permit. But what's it like for a police officer operating in this environment where you have an armed citizenry?
Sure. I'm born and raised here in New Hampshire. I was never a hunter growing up. I'm not a hunter right now. But I think open carry, at least for us in New Hampshire law enforcement, is not relatively new. In fact, I mean, it's been around for a long time, just like maybe that's symptomatic of New England as a whole, being, you know, a colonial state. Our police department also polices the Manchester-Boston Regional Airport. We've had many demonstrators at the airport, not recently, with the open carry and things along those lines. And we find that most of the time they're not causing any problems, and we haven't had any real issues in that respect. But one thing I've noticed as a uniformed police officer, and I was recently promoted to lieutenant, which takes me off of the road and puts me more into the station as a watch commander. But having served as a sergeant on the road for the last 6.5 years, one thing I've seen over the last year, more so than any other time in my career, is just random citizens, people that I've never even met before, coming up to our police officers and me personally just saying, thank you. Thank you for what you do. I stopped by Market Basket in Londonderry a couple weeks ago. Unfortunately, we had a murder in Londonderry in mid-May, and I was at Market Basket getting cases of water and ice because the investigators on scene, if it was a 90-degree day, extreme humidity, and we need to make sure that they stay hydrated. And just the outpouring of support from the community because they knew what was going on at that time. And I don't think I can make it to my cruiser from the checkout line without five or six people coming up and saying, thank you for what you do. So that's one thing. It's a positive thing. I think a trend I've seen in New Hampshire law enforcement. Again, I can't speak to across the nation because I'm a police officer here and I live here in the state for my entire life. But that is at least one mark of something that I've seen as encouraging. And we appreciate that support. And although you don't always see it maybe in the media, or you don't always see it go viral on a community level, I know we see it quite often.
So you've been a police officer for 14 years.
It'll be 14 years August 5th.
Yeah. And obviously being a police officer has always been a dangerous job. Does it feel more dangerous nowadays?
It does. I think that the violence... although, and I apologize, not knowing I was coming on the show until yesterday afternoon.
Well, and things got put together quickly. I really appreciate you being here.
Sure. I wasn't able to refresh my crime statistics on crime trends and crime rates across the nation. But here in New Hampshire, you know, we see, look, we had two city police officers shot just last month or two
in
months
Manchester,
ago.
Manchester, sure. And, West Side was on lockdown and...
Exactly. And to see that level of violence against our state's police officers, how many officers we've lost in the line of duty just here in New Hampshire since I've been a police officer since 2002, is troubling. And although we put on that badge and we put on that ballistic vest and we wear that firearm knowing that we're putting ourselves in danger, I don't think any of us expects to lose our lives when you go in for your shift for that day, although we know it's a possibility.
The exchange phone number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. And we'd really like to hear from you this hour. New Hampshire reaction to a week of violence and turmoil in the nation. We're getting a Granite State view on this debate over race, policing, guns, with guests throughout the hour who are involved with law enforcement, community activism. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Willard, I did want to ask you this as well. The New York Times summarized this issue as a volatile mix of race, policing, and guns. We've talked about race a little. We've talked about policing a little. What about guns? Is this, you know, how much is this part of it? What do you think?
Well, you know, actually, I wasn't talking about race. And I think that the New York Times headline is part of the problem because there's no such thing as race. And as long as we continue to push this idea that the human family has these separate interests based on this bogus biological identification called race, then you're baking in the problem, you know.
So describing it as a problem of race is part of the problem?
Yes, because it just, you know, kind of reinforces this idea that there's such a thing as race, that, you know, me and Chief Mara are different in some kind of way just because of, you know, I'm melanin enhanced and he's melanin deficient, you know. that has something beyond just, you know, surface superficial appearances. But in terms of guns, you know, I think that I think it is that guns are a significant part of the challenge. The couple of shootings that led up to and I'll say from the beginning that my heart goes out to the families of all of the people that were that have been killed recently, the police officers, the five police officers, but also the families of the two young men that were killed. And one of the things that I heard in the media about the police shootings was the officers justifying the shooting by saying, well, you know, they had a gun. And I mean, you know, guns are becoming more, you know, guns are this the NRA and handguns, open carry, closed carry, you know, it's all part of the larger issue that we have to deal with.
Well, and there has been a lot of talk in the media and elsewhere that some African Americans feel like their Second Amendment rights are not as well defended as white Americans. I know you don't like me saying white, black, Wooler, but just for ease of a conversation there for a moment. So we'll talk about that in a moment. And let's hear from you. Again, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire reacts to a week of violence and turmoil in the nation. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. And Lieutenant Patrick Cheatham is with us. He's a police officer from Londonderry, first vice president of the New Hampshire Police Association. Willard Lett is with us in studio, president of the Manchester NAACP, along with David Mera, Portsmouth police chief, formerly chief of police in Manchester. And all of you, let's go to our listeners. And Dan joins us from Wolfboro. Hi, Dan. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Go ahead, Dan.
I've made the personal speculation. It's not really an observation, but a speculation that one of the major problems between police and people who are inquired about them or inquired by them may have different cultural, behavioral, and visual cues. And so even though there's a nominal absence of racism, and maybe real absence of racism, the person of color and culture different from white established Americans stumbles on behavioral cues that are then misinterpreted by the police officers as resisting or threatening or something else, and or maybe not even misinterpreted. Maybe that it just puts them in a whole different space of anxiety about.
Well, Dan, yeah, thank you. And I think you mentioned this, Chief Mera. So, Dan, thanks a lot for the call.
Yes, Dan's absolutely right. That is part of training. We found in Manchester and throughout the state, New Hampshire is becoming more and more diverse. And it doesn't necessarily mean that your community in New Hampshire has to be diverse to have to deal with this because people are traveling through the different municipalities. Now, if you look at Manchester, for instance, we have people from all over the world. We are a refugee relocation center. So a lot of people have different views of the police. They don't see the police as being protectors. They see the police as being one of the reasons they've fled their countries. Now, if you look at it in just from United States' point of view, you don't have to be somebody from out of the country to have a different view of the police. That's what this we've been talking about. That's what this is all coming about, that African-American people do not view the police, and I'm not saying everybody, but a large segment of that community do not view the police the same way as perhaps my family would. So that comes down to training. Now, what's good about what's happening in New Hampshire is that every state has to have something, committee called the Racial and Ethnic Disparity. It's called RED. It used to be called Disproportionate Minority Contact. We have one in New Hampshire. And work that we are doing there is trying to break into that, try to provide training. For instance, at first the training involved having police officers trying to understand how youth from different cultures look at them. So we could see their point of view when we're interacting with them. Now that they're taking it a step further, we're now training youth how to look at police differently. This is why the police are doing this. This is why he's asking. This is why. And we're hoping if we can do that and we can do it enough that over time in New Hampshire, we can break through some of those barriers. Right now.
That's a big job.
Well, right now, Manchester, Nashua, and Rochester are doing projects. Videos have been produced how the right way to deal with the police, the right way for police to deal with kids. Manchester's already has it in their school in the school system. They've already started the training for students now. So there are some really good things going on in New Hampshire. And again, we're a small enough state that if we just work together, we can prevent some of these problems that are happening throughout the country from coming here.
Do you want to jump into, Willard, on our caller's comment that, you know, people from different cultures sometimes read cues differently or read language or body language differently?
I think that is true. And one of the things that evolutionarily we've grown to utilize this thing called pattern recognition, so that, you know, as we go through our life, we don't have to learn everything over and over again and again. So we see patterns, we look for patterns, we think about, well, what does this mean? I've seen this before. What has happened before? And based on that, then we're conditioned to, you know, react in a certain kind of way. In addition to just the individual interactions, though, we got to look at the institutional context and the kind of structural dynamics that come into play in terms of how we are influenced and taught, that feed our assumptions and expectations when we're in those situations.
Thanks a lot for the call, Dan. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, the number for you to join us, just your thoughts, feelings, hopes maybe, coming out of this terrible week that we've seen around the country, are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, we were not able to be joined by Professor Rena Goldthree, again, Professor of African and African-American Studies at Dartmouth College, but we are joined now by Pastor Bertha Perkins. She's at New Fellowship Baptist Church in Nashua. And Pastor Bertha Perkins, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for asking, and I'm happy to be a part of this conversation.
Well, we're glad to have you here. And right off the bat, I'm guessing that your sermon touched on this on Sunday. What did you say?
I touched some on it Sunday, although I was not the preacher of the hour. The thing that did happen on Sunday, and it was touched on by the speaker, who happens to be from Texas, and as a matter of fact, will be leaving today to go home for vacation into the area. And he's works in our community as well, and is a community activist, and works with our young people. And he's from the younger than I am, but from that era of civil rights and things that were going on. As a matter of fact, if I remember his personal story, he had someone in his family who was lynched by the Ku Klux Klan. So when we look at things through history and through time, things that have happened to not just one race of people, but certainly within our race, and when it comes around to where we are right now, I thought I recognized the voice of Willard Lett. I'm not sure, but
yes, he's
you do
here.
Have to look at the history and events. How do they get to where they are right now? So you can't help but look at it. But at the end of any day for me and for people in clergy, you must have a message of hope. And we don't just preach unity now at this time, but we preach it all the time. So, yes, I did touch on it, that lives matter, all lives. I didn't say all lives. Life matters, because that's the Christian message.
Well, I want to ask you, Pastor Perkins, about both of those things that you just said. So first of all, how did we get here? And at the beginning of this show, Willard Lett talked about, you know, the long history of slavery and institutional racism in this country. More recently now, after what we saw last week, some people, not everyone, but some people are saying, pushing back against the Black Lives Matter movement. And some, again, not all, are saying that, you know, this movement is increasing vitriol towards law enforcement. Chief Willard in Manchester said, pushing back against the media and politicians portraying law enforcement as killers of young Black men. He said, even the administration in the White House seems to feed that narrative. Chief Willard said, I've said such vitriol towards law enforcement is going to bring out the crazy in people and place police officers' lives in jeopardy. Well, here we are. What do you think? This is a hard question, Pastor Perkins. What do you think about the Black Lives Matter movement and its role and some of the pushback on it now?
Black life does matter. When I say all life matter, life does, and we want to hope for everyone. And certainly where our ministry is we're in a diverse neighborhood, and minorities that live there, and the basically it's a Hispanic community, but there are also poor African Americans, poor Caribbeans, poor Africans, people who are feel left out in many ways, hard to find jobs. Sometimes it seems as though people do not care. So when you feel left out, you feel there is no hope, and it seems, and that's the way it seems to play out. When you feel, you legitimately feel that you're targeted for every crime that goes on. What's there are events that take place, and it looks as though, well, you said, oh, was it an African American who did it, or is pointed out? I heard a report one day last week, and I think the report was, it went like this. Someone had done something. I think it was a hit and run, as I recall. And the person was described, it was an African American woman with a ponytail and wore glasses. Now, I heard the same report on another from another station in another state. They didn't describe her. They just said a woman. So it's those types of things that after a while, it seems as though our life does not matter. And it can seem that way, that when blacks are being killed by the police, and certainly I'm not talking against our police, because I believe the majority of them, they are the first responders. They're putting their lives in danger when they go out there, and they're there to protect us. I know that from where I live. So I certainly applaud the police and what they do in most cases. That does not mean that I don't look at things that are going on that are not the way they're not equal.
And
when you begin to think, anyone, if you think your life does not matter, yes, you will do some crazy things. This young man who killed those five officers, and because he did not like the way blacks were treated, black men in particular, I don't like the way they're treated either. I have two black sons and black grown grandchildren. So, no, I don't like the way they're treated. However, I am not going to go and get weapons and kill anyone. His life, he ended up not having, he lost his life.
Pastor Berger, let me
And still doing it, and then other lives were lost too. Now, this brings into question why we do what we do and why it was done. But what it did do, out of the midst of the confusion and all the anger going back and forth, it took this for us to maybe come together and say, well, look at what's going on. And we need to take a look at why something happened, not just that it happened, but there's a reason behind it. How do we get beyond that?
Well, and definitely you mentioned, yeah,
get beyond it together.
You mentioned message of hope, and for sure, I'm sure everybody definitely wants to hear that. I know Chief Mayor wants to talk about that, too. To you for a second, though, Lieutenant Cheatham, what do you think about this idea that Nick Willard puts out, that vitriol towards law enforcement is going to, as he said, bring out the crazy in people, place police officers' lives in jeopardy? How do you not feed that narrative but continue to point out real problems in our criminal justice system? I know this is a really hard question for you.
Not
you know,
necessarily.
Yeah.
It might be that it brings out the crazy in people. That's, to me, that's one person or a group of people perspective. It does bring out the craziness, but there's some crazy things going on in this world. And a lot of it is beyond race. It's economics. It's jobs. We're in a state of despair in America. And it rubs off in cases like this.
And Pastor Perkins, I just want to get our other guests in on this, too, because this is a really tricky point. And Chief Mayor, maybe we'll turn to you first on this one, then. You know, the idea that these issues with policing need to be pointed out, but you don't want to, or Chief Willard says anyway, feed a narrative that all law enforcement is out to get black men. I mean, how do you do both?
Well, I agree with Chief Willard. If you see the press coverage, I believe that it's a, I agree with the pastor. Any life matters. But when you look at the press coverage, you look at some of the politicians, what they are saying, it certainly feeds into this narrative that there are actually police officers out there looking to murder young black males. But I think the best illustration of your American police officer and what they stand for was what happened in Dallas. When you had the shooting started happening, they were right before that. It's a peaceful demonstration. They were protesting against the police.
Yeah.
And what had happened is you had the police office there. They were there to protect the protesters. Now, when the shooting happened, you saw, well, you didn't see it, but the interview, I've heard it on the radio a number of different times, of one of the protesters was there with one of her children. And she had been shot in the leg, and the officer shielded her right in the line of fire. The person that's there protesting against him, he shielded her and put his life at risk, and she was very moved by that. And I think that's the illustration of what the vast majority of police officers are all about in the United States.
Do you want to jump in, Woolard, on this idea that the Black Lives Matter movement has been criticized by some, again, not universally, but by some as kind of feeding this narrative and then, you know, things exploded?
Yeah, well, I'll say that, when we look at police shootings prior to this spate of video, cell phone videotapes of a man of African descent being shot, the primary concern for police in terms of police shootings was the identity movement. And the identity movement is not comprised of, of black people. But and the Black Lives Matter movement is not protesting the police. It's protesting police misconduct. And when the police departments and people police advocates close the ranks against holding police accountable for misconduct, then it makes the institution of law enforcement seem complicit and whatever misconduct is taking part. So I don't, before the Black Lives Matter movement started, there were police shootings and other kinds of police misconduct. I don't see it, creating that.
Here's a couple emails.
Can I say something?
Yeah, actually.
One of the things that I looked at was the fact that, yes, Black Lives Matter, and we saw lives lost. And in many cases, we saw that was not necessary. If we think they could have been brought to justice or if they needed to be questioned, they didn't have to be killed. Some of them very young. However, we didn't hear anything about Blue Lives Matter until after this tragic incident in Dallas.
Blue Lives Matter,
then
meaning police
Blue
officers.
Lives Matter.
Yeah.
So, right? So we go back to now, but we want to hop on the Black Lives Matter. All lives matter. We must respect life.
I have a
more than just taking one's life.
Heading into the break, Pastor Perkins and everybody in studio, a couple emails I want to share with you just heading into our break. And then we come out, we'll take more phone calls. I also have a couple specific questions just about policing and how it's done that I'll turn to you for, Lieutenant Cheatham. But just heading into the break, Tara from Lebanon says, regarding police deadly use of force, security teams at many hospitals in New Hampshire around the country have moved to the use of non-lethal devices. Have any police departments tried or used these types of devices? Thank you for that email, Tara. And someone on Facebook says, why can't police departments have civilian oversight? We'll talk about that as well after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Granite Staters react to this rising national debate over race, policing, guns after a violent week in America. A lot of people have been processing over the weekend and are still wondering what's going on, how we move forward. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We have four guests. David Mara is here, Portsmouth Police Chief, formerly Chief of Police in Manchester. Also, Woolard Lett, President of the Manchester NAACP. Joining us on the line is Pastor Bertha Perkins. She's with New Fellowship Baptist Church in Nashua. And also with us in studio, Lieutenant Patrick Cheatham, police officer from London, Londonderry, the first vice president of the New Hampshire Police Association. And all of you, before we go back to the phones, I did want to get you in, Lieutenant Cheatham, on a couple specific questions that we've gotten from people just about how police do what they do. For example, that email that I read from Tara in Lebanon before the break, she asks about police department use of non-lethal devices. I've wondered that myself, too. Why in some of these tense confrontations, police don't use tasers or other non-lethal devices?
Sure. I can say here in New Hampshire, we are one of the most trained law enforcement communities, so to speak, across the nation. When I was a young officer, my academy was only 12 weeks long, and now current officers, when they're hired, the academy has now been extended to 16 weeks. And I'm sure when Chief Marr went to the academy some 30 years ago, the academy might have even been shorter then. And also in New Hampshire, we have something called the New Hampshire Police Standards and Training Council, and it's a council made up of not only police officers but civilian members who do review law enforcement conduct. So if an officer were called, his or her conduct was called into question, they would have to go before PSTC and possibly face a decertification. As police officers, we hold a certification, and if we don't have that, we're not by law allowed to be police officers here in the state. So to answer some of the callers or maybe some of the emails, some communities do specifically have police commissions like they do in Manchester or Nashua or the city of Concord.
Civilian oversight that the Facebook question asks about.
Correct. I'm not sure if there's specifically civilian oversight, but and maybe Chief Mark can speak to more on from the city perspective. And, of course, in Portsmouth, I know they have a police commission as well. But as New Hampshire law enforcement officers, our training has adapted to meet the needs of our community in response to citizens' concerns. For example, again, just going back to when I first started as a police officer, tasers were just beginning to roll out as viable tools for police officers. Today, most law enforcement officers carry a taser. So as technology has advanced, law enforcement has tried to keep up with it and learn, hey, how can we do our job better? What technologies are available to help us and assist us in our mission?
Here's the second part of this person's Facebook comment about civilian oversight. This person says, if a community felt like they controlled their police force, it would certainly engender trust. How do you engender trust in Londonderry, Lieutenant Cheatham? It's tough.
Sure. Well, I think it's very important, and I can speak for my chief, Bill Hart, that something that we strongly encourage and we practice on a daily basis is open, honest dialogue with our community. That's not only through attending town council meetings and dealing with the town council, but having an open door policy with our community. Every complaint that is made against an officer, regardless of how severe, is fully vetted and fully investigated, and it's all documented so that way we can show that we are responding and not ignoring the needs of our community. We also recently posted all of our policies and procedures online to show our community we have nothing to hide. There are some high-risk policies that specifically detail law enforcement response to high-risk matters that we don't post. But as far as our procedures for reviewing citizen complaints, and I encourage anyone, LondonderryNH.org, you can go online and check and see that more recently, we've posted all these different things. So I think by having, again, open, honest dialogue and having an open-door policy with your community, that's how you can encourage, demonstrate, and foster that great working relationship that as police officers here in New Hampshire, I firmly believe we have with our community members.
So here's a question for you, Chief Mara. Londonderry can do the absolute best job possible. Manchester or Portsmouth, where you are now, can do everything possible to have an open door with the community and the best training and so forth. And yet people see these videos from elsewhere in the country, as we saw last week, and it's trust is eroded, even if you're making your best effort.
It's a matter of perception, not just in this issue, but in any issue. If you don't feel safe, even though statistics doesn't bear it out that you're in a high crime area, but if you don't feel safe, it's just like you might as well be in a high crime area. If people feel from media accounts, videos, that this is something that is systematic throughout law enforcement, that's something, that perception is something that we have to deal with. And that does come down to you need to have that open dialogue. You need to be able to address the community and interact. For instance, after Ferguson and the events in Ferguson in New York a couple of years ago when the police officer shot the young man there, and then two New York police officers were shot and killed. We reached out to the community, and it was a group effort. Willard was involved in that, and we had a community dialogue, and I thought it was very helpful. I thought it was great to be able to hear everybody's view. We got to hear of how people felt about our police department. And I think I think people are afraid to talk about race. I know I've had many interesting conversations and very frequent conversations with Willard on this, but to me that's helped me become a better chief of police because I need to hear other people's point of views because you have to know who you're policing. And another thing that across the country I think would help is you have to have your police department reflect your community. If you're in a community that is majority minority or has a lot of different people from different ethnic backgrounds, I strongly believe that your police department should be that. I know New York police made that effort, and I believe now that the majority of their police officers are minority. So I think that's also important to do. So there are a lot of things that we can do as a community that needs to be done, especially after something like this. I think we should ramp up the conversations with the community. I think this radio program, what we're doing today, is very good. But people are afraid to talk about instances with race. They're afraid to be called racist. They don't want to, or they don't want the attention that could negatively impact them. And I think as chiefs of police, we need to be able to bring that subject up and talk about it.
Well, do you want to jump in, too, on this idea that, you know, despite the best efforts of the gentleman sitting here, you know, these videos go viral. They're terrible. We've seen a stream of them over the last couple of years. So it destroys efforts that good people are making to create trust.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that is really important is for everyone, and we hear it, but for everyone to speak out against bad behavior, misbehavior. Last September, I organized through the NAACP a 5K walk against police misconduct. And I invited the chief of police to come and address the folk who were involved in the walk. He declined. He declined because he said he thought that it was the fact that we were suggesting that police misconduct was inappropriate. He wasn't comfortable, you know, taking a stand. So, you know, nobody likes crime. Nobody wants crime, except the criminals. And so we got to stand united against that. All of us who are, people who want the right thing, got to stand together and say we want the right thing because silence is consent. So one of the ways that the police departments builds trust in communities and one of the ways that the communities build good relationships with the police is that, you know, we stand together against inappropriate conduct, inappropriate behavior.
Let's go back to our listeners, all of you. Lots of people who want to jump into our conversation. And Dave is in Chester. Hi, Dave. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. I was thinking about what you're speaking with today, and my understanding is that in New Hampshire, in order to be a policeman, the State Police Academy is a 90-day course.
No, that's not correct.
It's not a 90-day course. So are you thinking that's – okay. Dave, go ahead.
What I'm thinking is if the policemen were better trained and better paid, that they could – handle conflict resolution on the side of the road when they encounter people, and we wouldn't have a clogged up court system.
So better training, better training and better pay for police. First of all, do you want to address the training, Lieutenant Cheatham?
Sure. Like I stated earlier, to become a full-time certified New Hampshire law enforcement officer, not only do you have to go through an extensive background process, but the police academy is actually 16 weeks long, 14 of which is residential Monday through Friday, and I believe the last 2 weeks it's a commuting day program. So it's nearly 4 months of in-house academy training, followed up then, of course, by a field training program in your community or whatever agency for whom you work. But I think, you know, when it comes down to pay and benefits and contracts, I think that does speak to how do you attract a qualified candidate who wants to participate in a 20 or 25-year career, and how do you get the best candidates possible? Especially in New Hampshire, we are so selective in who we hire, and it's not easy to become a police officer in New Hampshire, and I can't speak across the nation, but as a polygraph examiner myself of nearly 8 years, I can tell you that we probably only accept about 30% of the applicants who apply actually become police officers, and that number may even be lower if I were to look back at my polygraph records to see what the pass rate is of someone who passes a background and then continues on to be a police officer. So I think here in New Hampshire, we really do it right when it comes to the training of our police officers, not only at the state level. We all attend the same academy, but I can speak to Londonderry that we have annual reviews of use of force. I know last year we had just over 1,000 custodial arrests, only 17 of which actually resulted in an officer's use of force, and of those 17, all were non-deadly uses of force. And when it comes to training, I know the city of Manchester, the city of Portsmouth, they are leaders in New Hampshire law enforcement, and I'm honored and proud to call Chief Mara my friend and Chief Willard as well, because I think the work that they're doing really is excellent work, and I appreciate as a police officer in New Hampshire the leadership that they've shown as chiefs. And again, just wanted to say thank you before we run out of time here on the show.
Well, and thank you for the call, Dave. Here's an email I want to share. This is from Ken in Farmington. Someone just said the protesters in Dallas were, quote, protesting against the police. That's not true. They were protesting against police brutality, against misconduct. Pretending that this is protesting against the police seems to be supporting the assertion that brutality is part of the institution. And it's unfair to the protesters. It's a straw man to devalue them and their voices. Ken, thank you for that email. Here's another one that I want to throw to you, Pastor Perkins, please. This is from Barbara. She says, everyone in the USA has an ethnic heritage, and we've come together to make a great nation. There is only one group of people, most of whom have been citizens long before I was born, of Lithuanian parents. But Barbara says, I am never singled out as a Lithuanian American. She says, people of African heritage are always, her emphasis, singled out as black people. They are never just friends or neighbors or victims or perpetrators. Barbara says, perhaps the media could lead the way, stop using the labels, and start an inclusive mindset for all of us. And Pastor Perkins, I'd love to get your thoughts on that too, please.
Well, before I can address that, there's something I need to say. I heard about the police in Manchester and Londonderry and
sure.
Portsmouth. That's really great. But I have to put a plug in for the police department of Nashua. Our police chief has an open dialogue. An open door. This conversation goes on consistently, meeting with the community, and I know it's going to continue. Before this took place, we had dialogue with our chief Savoy, and he works with the community.
Well, if he's listening, I'm sure he appreciates that.
Out
yeah,
go as African American, regardless of where we come from, we are diverse. Whether we're born in America. And then it depends on how many generations we have. We're here of, I mean, it's probably six generations, and I'm not a baby. But or you may be from Africa. We might be from the Caribbean. We have different cultures, but we're lumped into one group. But we are people, and we need to understand that and understand and respect each other. So we'll just have to. In order to do that, we have to get to know each other. And that means coming together. And as I believe it was Willard who said, that it isn't easy. It's not comfortable sometimes to do that. And it needs to be open dialogue. And so we can say how we feel about certain things. How do you see yourself? I went to a diverse training scene once, and it says, how do you identify yourself? Not how others see us, but how do we see ourselves? And how do we want others to see us? And stop allowing the media to describe who we are.
You know, it's interesting. People talk about the media, and that's changed so much just in the past 20 years. I mean, Chief Mara, the media now is what you see on social media. It's what you see when you click on your phone. It's what you see on your Facebook feed and so forth. I don't know what you think about what Pastor Perkins says that we need to stop looking at people in one way or another and just, you know, we're all people. We're all in this together. I know you wanted to offer some messages of hope, too.
Yeah, I believe, I agree with her that people should be able to identify who they are instead of being put into a category. And I think Willard was saying that when we first started. I think we concentrate too much on race. I think most of the problems in this country are coming from socioeconomic issues. As a chief of police, I typically don't talk about this, but there are some issues that go deeper than what we're seeing now. Something is not working. Our country has failed terribly when you look at, for instance, and I've talked a little bit about this, the number of disproportionate number of African Americans that are in our prisons. There's something wrong there. The minorities in general, where they stand in a socioeconomic level. I think that is where all the problems start. There's something that is not working in this country, and it's a bigger problem, and I think we all have to work on that. And I'd like to say one thing about the media. An ancillary effect about all this negativity that's coming across is that right now we're looking for good police officers to stop having problems such as the ones that have been happening where people are making bad decisions. Right now it's hard enough to recruit. So if you're a young person and you're the media, you're listening to all this, it's just cutting down on the number of qualified candidates that we're going to want to pull from.
Well, and I feel like we had so much more to talk about today, and we've got lots of people on the phone. If you could see me here in studio, I've got a stack of emails and Facebook comments that we didn't get to. So I think this is a conversation that we're going to have again. And I really, really want to thank everybody for joining us today. Pastor Perkins, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Pastor Bertha Perkins at New Fellowship Baptist Church. Willard Lett, great to see you. Thank you for being here. Willard Lett, he's the president of the NAACP, and Lieutenant Patrick Cheatham and Chief David Mara, thank you also for your time. Really appreciate it. This is The Exchange on NHPR.